following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. Listeners to this radio show should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the mutual fund, variable annuity, and variable annuity subaccounts. To obtain a prospectus, you may contact Friedman Financial or your financial advisor. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making a potential investment. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Well, good morning, and thank you for being so patient this morning. Apparently, when you wear a mask to a radio show, the sound doesn't come across very well. And so I was informed by my producer, Jay, to remove my mask. So this will be the one time today that I'm going around without a mask. This is Mark Friedman, President, CEO of Friedman Financial, and host of Dollars and Cents. I am kidding, actually. We just had a little bit of technical difficulties this morning, but happy to be with you this bright and sunny Sunday morning. Many colleges around the country are wishing that they were gathering students on their campuses to celebrate college graduations this weekend. I know my daughter, Alana, would have been graduating from University of Rhode Island this weekend, and she unfortunately is not walking across the stage today, but we are proud of her nonetheless, and we will figure out ways to celebrate with her in many other ways as the weeks and months progress. And congratulations to all of the graduates out there. I'm sure parents, grandparents, friends, family, colleagues are so proud. And if you've been driving around lately, around the cities and streets of the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and probably the rest of this country, how are the sign companies doing these days? If you're a sign manufacturer, man, you are probably running out of materials, because if you drive around, there are signs, it seems like, in front of everybody's driveway congratulating the graduate, wishing someone a happy Mother's Day, happy Father's Day, congratulations on your award for being on the track team, the football team, whatever it was. Lots of signs. So, you know, this whole coronavirus, the COVID-19 pandemic that we're dealing with has forced us to think a little bit differently. That's what we were told to do 8 weeks ago, or almost 10 weeks ago or so now, and we are doing it. And, you know, I think we've been doing it pretty successfully. I mean, there is all sorts of ranges of worries that people may have about this pandemic. And some are on the extreme paranoia side, and there are those that are on the other side that are extremely liberal about it and saying, I don't care, I'm just going to let the disease come to me and I will fight it on my own. Probably wrong on both ends. I think we have to find a happy medium and figure out how we move forward in the period of this pandemic. And we are starting to see what I call some green shoots. You see, each and every Sunday, we provide financial advice in a language you can understand. If there's nothing more confusing as watching some of the news stations and trying to read between the lines as to what people say, or even worse, watching press conferences and reading stories and then having other writers, neighbors, whomever it might be, interpreting what that person said for it to be really something else. We've seen headlines get mangled from what the real intent of the message has been. We've seen people interpreting one word instead of another. And sometimes it's even a spelling mistake that happens instead of saying couldn't rather than could. And all of a sudden that creates fury because someone made human error and typed in the wrong contraction. So, folks, we all have to try to figure out what works for us. Where are we going to be as we begin to continue to head towards the summer and prepare for, frankly, the gates to start opening? And we are seeing some green shoots that things are progressing further. One of the things that was a story that appeared in the Wall Street Journal, I think it was just yesterday or the day before, I lose track of days, is a story that talks about how people who say they are social distancing, or those of us that have worked on social distancing and following the stay-at-home orders, are actually moving around a little bit more than we say we're moving around. And the way they know that is a story that was shown in the journal that showed how cell phone companies can track your movement. Well, think about it. I mean, when you travel around wherever you go, cell phone can ping and find where you are, right? So what they were showing was every state in the country. You could have found every state in the country here. And you could have seen the movement activity of cell phones in each individual state, looking at five different periods of time. It was like beginning of March, middle of March, end of March, middle of April, and now beginning of May. And to watch how that changed. And what you're starting to see is all of a sudden you saw lesser movement. I mean, there was always movement. There was lesser movement during the month of April. It was heavy movement just before March. It started to lessen as we headed towards April. And then all of a sudden we're starting to see more movement in the months of May. Now, and it's not just in the states that have opened. There's everywhere. Look, I mean, if you went out this weekend, you just wanted to get in your car, right? Even if you were being socially distanced and safe, you just wanted to move around. You wanted to get out there. We're not talking about people that are going for a walk around the neighborhood. We're talking about people that are going, traveling 5, 10, 20, 50 miles. It's happening. And what's interesting is they were talking about on the Wall Street Journal is how you can match the movement of cell phones to see which cell phones are connecting with others. This is all part of this whole contact tracing thing that we're going to be able to start looking at as we begin to identify this virus and the tracking of the virus even further. Folks, we are being watched. Whether you like it or not, people know. Somebody up there knows where we're moving. And so it was a little interesting when I read that article. A couple other green shoots that were out there is this COVID risk tolerance that a professor had put together and I thought was rather interesting. And I thought I'd run it through with you today to ask you, where do you think you are on a scale of 0 to 5? It's called the very strict to very open COVID risk tolerance level. Now, I want you to think about this when I go through this with you, of where you think you are today, and then you might think back, well, maybe 4 weeks ago I was a little bit different. So you fall under the very strict category. So 0, the very strict category, if you stay within your home, you're regularly staying with your home, you're maintaining 6 feet distances, you have no outside contact with anybody, you have strict infection control protocols in your house, and you have no contact with the outside world. Is that you? Well, that would be considered COVID risk tolerance level 0. That is the most strict level possible. Here's the second level, strict number 1. It says you leave your container, your home, for essentials. You maintain 6 feet distances outside of your home. You hand wash when you touch anything. You wear masks outside of your home. And you do no socializing outside of the people who live within your container or your home. Is that you? So are you at the strict level? Maybe you've moved on to the fairly strict level. You leave the house for work and for groceries. You socialize with others at 6 feet. You exercise outdoors in low-density areas. You have no intimacy or touch outside of your container. And you shop once a week or less. As you can see, even going from fairly strict to very strict, strict level 0 to fairly strict 2, there's a pretty significant difference between the two. Where are you on this list? Are you very strict? Are you fairly strict? I think the next one is where people are beginning to feel comfortable moving towards. And this is what's called the somewhat open level. Socializing with less than 10 other people at a 6 foot distance. We'll socialize with others closer than 6 feet if at some level or less. You're willing to go outside of your container with a mask on, and you will have intimacy or touch at some level or less. I mean, you can determine what some level or less is. But I think people are getting a little bit more comfortable with, and I'm seeing this, a mask on, an elbow pump, a fist pump, a nod of a head. And then the next one, moderately open, regularly socializes with others, does not regard any social distance parameters, no use of masks, leaves the house regularly. Now, where are you? Are you there? I'm not seeing much of that here in Massachusetts, though we are seeing hints of it around the country. That could be the dangerous spot, or any of these. I mean, who's to say what's dangerous? I'm no doctor. And then the very open level here is no precautions other than hand washing, may desire to actually get infected, and may have already been infected. Where are you on this list? Are you a 1, a 0, a 2, or a 3? I think we all need to be honest with each other. What we say we are and what we actually are may be two different things. And that's one of the truths about what's going on right now. It's easy to reprimand a lot of folks in social media and news reports and amongst others, but are we actually following the protocol to the letter of the law also? It'll be interesting to see what Governor Baker comes out with and says this on Monday morning to see what opening really looks like. I really am a little frustrated that he is not sharing better guidance on this. But we have to hope that the collective powers that be that work daily to try to figure out what the right thing is to do, that they will be pushing us in the right direction, and soon we'll be able to open. Soon we'll be able to gather with one another and see what's out there. But one of the things that's one report that came out this week was a retail stores number. There was a report that came out back that looked at April retail stores. Because as you know, as well as I do, no one's shopping these days, right? No one's really getting out to a lot of stores. But there are certain stores that are doing well. And I got some issues about why you can go to Target and buy pajamas, but you can't go to Kohl's and get pajamas. That just doesn't seem to make sense to me. And I think there's some logic that supports my thinking, but it's a little late to do something about it now, too. But let's take a look at the retail stores category. It's interesting. In the month of April, there was a 16.4% drop in retail sales. Now, if you look at the various sectors and categories within retail sales, who did it the worst? Well, honestly, the category that lost the most in retail sales, and if you're a business owner in this category, you're feeling it the most, are folks that are in the business of clothing and accessories. For the month of April, it was down 78.8%. Now, this is retail stores, meaning brick-and-mortar stores, not online, brick-and-mortar stores. The next area that was down was electronics and appliances. I think more appliances than electronics. Furniture was down 58%. Sporting goods down 38%. Now, certain areas that weren't down that much, but down a little, was building materials and garden equipment. You can still go to Home Depot. You could get some of your gardening stuff. But there was one area that was up for the month, and that was what was called non-store retailers. Well, you know what non-store retailers are, don't you? Think Amazon. If you could buy your stuff via Amazon or buy products through companies that don't actually have a retail brick-and-mortar operation, but you're able to buy it online, their sales went up 8.4%, while everybody else's sales went down. So we felt a little safe ordering stuff online, but obviously weren't able to go into a lot of the businesses, and I certainly hope that some of these retailers start to open, because what I'm getting concerned about is this this issue that we're seeing with many restaurants and other businesses saying, okay, we're prepared to open. But the problem is my employees don't want to come back to work. And some might think, oh, they don't want to come back to work because they're worried about infection. They're worried about catching the virus. No, the true and honest answer about why they're not coming back to work is because they're getting paid 2, 3, 4, and even 5 times more money to sit on their butts at home. Now, that's the truth of it, folks. That's really the truth. People, I think, want to go back to work if they could make money. But if you have to go back to work at a restaurant and can't be certain what your income is going to be, but know that you've got a guaranteed income stream coming from the government through at least the end of June, maybe into July, why wouldn't you stay at home? That's the reason. Using the virus as the reason, I think, is I think is inappropriate. I understand there's an element of fear there, and I shouldn't say that it isn't appropriate. I shouldn't say that it's inappropriate, but it's an excuse, because I think each business owner is working as hard as they can along with the state guidelines to be as safe and create the safest possible environment for you to work in and for others to work in. But meanwhile, there are many people that are sitting at home collecting money far more than they've ever collected before. Think about this. 80% of the population in America makes under $40,000 a year. And if that was what your income was, your income today in retirement, I mean, not in retirement, I'm sorry, by collecting unemployment benefits right now is a far higher weekly paycheck than what you were making when you were working. And those folks that are making the under 40,000 number, those folks are our essential employees to making businesses run. I mean, we've categorized all sorts of things of what's essential. Believe it or not, I'm considered essential. I find that hard to believe, but I do understand around it as well, because as a financial advisor, if our clients need money from their accounts, if they need to add money, to make a distribution from their account, to pay their mortgage, to buy a house, to purchase a car, to get extra cash, to gift money to their children. They need the mechanism to be able to do that, and that makes me essential. But I think the person, I mean, who's to decide what essential really is? I think that's a real interesting question, and I hope we'll start to loosen the ties on what essential business really looks like, and realize that, you know, most businesses, even service professions, are essential. Look, the industries that are getting hit the hardest right now from this COVID-19 pandemic is the hospitality field and the service field. Look, if you're a massage therapist, if you're a chiropractor, if you're a dentist, those are all services as well. And no one's feeling too comfortable going to visit those folks. I mean, would you like to have someone sticking their face in your mouth to clean your teeth? Of course, under emergency situations, they have to do that. But other essential services, things like getting your nails done, just all, you can think of all the different services that are involved. Restaurants, just going to a bar, a social environment. Just, I can't wait for this stuff to happen, to reopen, but I know we need to be safe. I know we need to be safe, and we need to wear the masks. But I think wearing the masks is going to be a solution that is going to be around for a while. And if we can do that, I think we can get back to at least some sense of normalcy. But then again, I'm no doctor, and I don't profess to know anything about the medical field. I just look at the real world. I just look at the mental challenges people are having just by being cooped up and being told what they can't do every day, and then all of a sudden being told you can't do it today, but maybe you can do it tomorrow, but maybe you can do it tomorrow. It is tough. There are people dying from this pandemic, and I feel terrible for them. I feel terrible for the families. I feel terrible for the people that have had to struggle through staying in hospitals, and I feel grateful for those who have recovered, and grateful for all of the frontline workers at our hospitals and grocery stores, for that matter. But we need to get back to work. We need to get back out there. We need to take on this illness. I don't know that we'll even ever find a vaccine, but if we can control the spread, if we can manage how long this remains in our body, in our system, well, I'd be very happy with that too for now. We got to get out there. All right, we've got to take a quick break. When we get back, I want to talk to you about a few things that I've learned recently about what's going on with this economy, where we're going, where we're heading, and we're going to be on our way pretty darn soon. Hang tight, folks. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Each week, I try to provide listeners with financial advice in a language you can understand. And much of my advice comes from real-life situations that happens in my office, Friedman Financial, each and every day. You see, at Friedman Financial, we help individuals and families create smart strategies for spending money in retirement. Our approach is committed to placing your interests first. And best of all, Friedman Financial is independent, and we're a fee-based financial planning and investment management firm. We're absolutely committed to helping you get your financial house in order. When you're ready to get serious about your financial planning needs, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or on the web at FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Stay home. Stay home. No reason in the world for you to roam.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hopefully we're sounding a little bit better. We've got the connection working a little stronger, and our technical difficulties perhaps are behind us now. And we are here. I'm here broadcasting from my home once again in North Andover. We are week, I don't know, 9, 10, who's the lost track of time? I forget that it's even Sunday. It's I'm glad my alarm reminds me of that, because, geez, all these days seem to come together. Hope you're all doing well. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Normally, right across the street from the, well, currently closed North Shore Mall, and just above the hopefully soon to reopen Alto Forno restaurant on 41 Cross Street in Peabody. But for now, we are here in my home, broadcasting to you and trying to provide you with some financial advice in a language you can understand. We are here answering your calls. If you wanted to call in, 800-370-1049. That's 800-370-1049. If you've got some questions for us, we can talk about anything as it relates to money, as it relates to pandemic unemployment insurance, the stimulus package, required minimum distributions, the investment accounts you might hold, asset allocation, insurance, home ownership, mortgage rates, anything you want to talk about, let's talk about it. And hey, I just mentioned mortgage rates. And hey, if you've been thinking about refinancing, folks, man, what a great time to get out there and refinance. And I think now that most of the PPP loans have been paid out and the banks can get back to a normal sense of business again, they can meet with regular customers. If you want to go out and try to refinance your home right now, 30-year rates at 2.65%, ask yourself, what do you have for a rate? If you've got a rate that's in the fours right now and you could get a rate that's in the twos, I'd be looking to do that in a second. But, you know, of course, you got to take a look at your whole situation. You can't just jump the gun and do it. You got to make sure that you understand where everything is and what everything is worth. But I was talking with somebody yesterday, or maybe it was Friday. I lost track of days. They were looking to get a $400,000 mortgage. $400,000 mortgage. A 30-year $400,000 mortgage was going to cost them $2,000 a month. And if they went with a 15-year, it was going to cost them $2,700 a month. $2,700 a month to pay off a $400,000 loan in 15 years is a pretty darn good deal. And the way that you can qualify for mortgages these days, with rates being as low as they are, it's interesting. However, I will say this. I don't know if I'd start to invest in real estate in commercial areas like Boston or New York or any of those places, because I don't know. I tend to think that those real estate prices are going to go down. I heard a story, and here's what's supporting that thinking. I listened to Eric Schmidt. Eric Schmidt was the former CEO at Google. And he is really brilliant. Listen to this guy. He was probably for about 15 minutes on CNBC earlier this week. And you can find it if you go to the CNBC website. You can find the video. He was talking about how life is going to change, probably over the next couple of years. And one of the things that's interesting is he said, well, I think we all know that many people are feeling very comfortable working at home these days. And businesses aren't in any major rush to get you back to the office. But I think it's fairly clear that moving forward, even though we knew we were going to be able to work from home and work digitally and remotely, businesses are now going to start to realize that, wait a second, I don't need to spend, you know, $70, $80 a square foot for real estate in downtown Boston for customer service employees or for people that who can work remotely from home, even for my salespeople. Maybe I need to have beautiful executive offices, some really nice conference rooms, some working environments, but I don't need so many people to come in. And I might not need nearly, I won't need 10 floors of a skyscraper or, you know, or multiple locations around the city. When all of that starts to happen, when those lease renewals come up, people are going to say, I'm not going to pay those prices anymore. I need less space. And when there's less space and there's less demand, you know what happens to real estate prices? They go down. Yeah, they go down. Now people, real estate, they can't go down. Real estate always goes up. No, it can go down. Now, will it stay down? Who knows? But I think we all know that real estate prices in Boston are among the most expensive in the country. Will people continue to pay those rates? The other part of this, though, that I thought that Eric Schmidt had said, Eric Schmidt is the former CEO of Google, had said, be prepared for suburban life to expand. You know, for the past few years, you've heard of all these people moving into Boston. Moving into Boston and paying enormous prices for these condos, for these skyscrapers, or for these places all around Boston because they want to live in Boston because that's where the activity is. Well, I think we all know that the word activity may be a little minimized for the next year or two. And those people might be thinking to themselves, and others might be thinking, wait a second, if I can't be active and be part of the nightlife and the whole living experience in Boston because of social distancing, maybe it's not quite worth spending, you know, $1 million for 800 square feet in New York. I mean, or in Boston. That's going to change. I think we are going to see an influx of people wanting to migrate to the suburbs because, frankly, there's more space. The suburb locations, I have a feeling the restaurants, all of these outdoor venues, they're going to be more thoughtful because they, frankly, have more space to create environments that are both safe, socially distant, but enjoyable. It's going to be real interesting. People are going to start moving, I think, to the suburbs. I think the value of property in suburbia could go up, while the value of property in highly populated areas, highly dense areas, could go down. Now, is that a speculative play? Am I suggesting that you make some moves or buy this or sell that? Absolutely not. This is an observation. And it's an observation that I share with Eric Schmidt, who's the former CEO of Google, who was on CNBC this past week, talking about that idea, that whole idea of having that that lake house, so that those other places, a lot of people that are in highly concentrated areas, they want to have another place outside of the metropolitan Boston and metropolitan New York. A lot of these people are enjoying their time out by the lake or out where there's a little bit more fresh air. But what we need to fix, and the next thing that the government is going to have to realize we need to prioritize, is number one, is we need to get our internet service working better across this country. There are many dead spots, many places where internet service is not all that powerful. And so if you want to spend time in the mountains, in the lakes, in other more rural areas, we need to make sure that you have the resources available to have access to electronic information so that you can do work from wherever you want. Another observation that was brought to our attention that I thought was brilliant by Eric was this idea that in America right now, the government has put enough money into the economy to offset lost wages for most people. It's one of the reasons that the stock market isn't off nearly as much as it could be. Remember, the stock market was off some 32, 35% mid part of March. It's now made back more than 50% of what it's lost. And it's just kind of wobbling along over the next, well, it's been wobbling for the past couple weeks and will probably continue to do so moving forward for a little while. And the reason why it's just wobbling right now is because the average American actually has more money in their pocket than they did 10 weeks ago. How is that possible? Well, they've started collecting unemployment benefits and they've received a stimulus check. Now, by the way, I heard a show, I don't know which station I was listening to, but there was someone that was talking about that everybody is going to get a stimulus check. That is not true. Not everybody gets a stimulus check. It's all based upon your income, your adjusted gross income. So not everybody's going to get it. If you made between $75,000 and $98,000, I think it is, as an individual, you'll be entitled to a stimulus check or a portion thereof. If you're married and your income is between $150,000 and $198,000, you'll get a stimulus check or a portion thereof based upon how it phases out. So many people, the vast majority of folks, though, are getting a stimulus check, and many of who are unemployed are now getting unemployment benefits plus that extra $600. And that is more money than they've ever had in a weekly paycheck. Now, granted, it could end in July, but for right now, the government has put more money in our pockets than we've ever had before. And what's really interesting, we have nothing to spend it on. So we're accumulating all this money in the bank, because you can ask for forbearance. Many people can ask for forbearance on their mortgage if they can't pay it. And I hope you are paying your mortgage if you can. But we're really understanding what goes back to something that I teach at the elementary schools to the kindergarten or first graders, the difference between a want and a need. I think we are realizing that we're really understanding what it is that we need to support our lives. And the stuff that we want, we can't have it right now. Or if we don't have the ability to get to it, we'll wait. But we know what we need, and there's enough money coming in to cover what it is that we need for most Americans. Not all for sure, but for most Americans, that's happening. And so because of that, if the government can allow us to, if they have to even do a second stimulus package, if they can provide enough income to America to keep us level while we deal with this coronavirus, where should the emphasis on infrastructure, on dollars, on thinking, on resources be? And the idea, which I thought was brilliant from Eric, was two areas: education and transportation. Because here's the truth, folks. We're all wondering, camps canceled. Probably a lot of these amusement parks aren't going to open, at least early on. But we got to get back to school. We got to get our kids back in the classroom. We got to make sure that our teachers and our janitors and our administrators feel safe when they're interacting with all of these kids in these close quarters. So wouldn't it make sense that if we're going to spend any money, large amounts of money, and spend it quickly, that we figure out a way to build our college campuses, our elementary schools, our high schools, we build, even if it's temporary classroom settings, so that we can get our kids back educated and back into school in a safe and comfortable environment. Look how quickly we've been able to build and assemble hospitals for thousands of people. There's got to be a way for us to be able to do this for the education community. Because until the kids get back to school, until the education community is open, there are many parents who will never feel comfortable going back to work. Because they think, what do I do with my kids? If I have to go back to work, but my kids are at home, do I want to pay a nanny again, that I've never had to pay before, when I've been able to send my kids to public school for, if you will, free, even though we pay our taxes to do that? That's a dilemma. We need to fix the education system first. Education, and then secondarily, transportation. Because our kids need to be able to get to school. We need to be able to get to work. Transportation, whether it's bus, train, whatever it is. I'm not talking about planes right now. They got their bailout money. They'll figure that out. But I think we've got to focus education and transportation. You know, if retail businesses and basic shops don't open up quick enough, it's unfortunate. I mean, I'd love to see them open up. Don't get me wrong. But the government can provide financial assistance to sustain us until we can get back to where we need to be. But our kids, a third of our population, needs to get back to school so that we can get on with our lives. It'll be interesting to see how that works out. See, we have both here in America, both a health problem and an economic problem. And you have to ask yourself, which should we address first, or can we address them both? And at what priority? I think they have to work side by side. You have to address the health problem and you have to address the economic problem. See, one of the things economically that's not making sense, and this is a report that came out, there's a website called The Virtual Capitalist. I don't know if you've ever seen it before. You can go to the website. They put together the coolest charts. This website showed, people will call us about stocks. People will say, hey, Mark, what do you think of this stock? Well, we don't deal with individual stocks. But people are thinking, oh, my God, the Zoom technology thing, this thing's awesome. It's unbelievable what Zoom technology can do. Well, I'll tell you something about Zoom technology. Back in January, there were 10 million users. And when I last reported this to you in April, there were 200 million users. And now, folks, get this. There are more than 300 million users using Zoom technology. Zoom technology is a publicly traded stock. And Zoom technology stock has gone from February to the end of May up 130%. The stock has gone up 130%. But what's really fascinating to me is what the value of Zoom technology really is. Zoom technology is, I'm trying to find, where's my other report here that I just had a second ago? Oh, here it is, over here. Zoom technology has seen its stock price just fly up. But Zoom technology is worth $683 million. That's what it's valuing Zoom tech. I'm sorry, it's doing revenues of $683 million. Yet it's valuing the company from a stock price worth more than 8 airlines. Right now, if you compared the value, the collective value of Air France, Southwest, Delta, American Airlines, United Airlines, Lufthansa, and a couple others, all of those airlines together, all of them are worth less than Zoom technology. Does that make sense? No. So what we have to realize is that there are stocks that are out there that are teasing us a bit, but stocks also that are significantly undervalued. And we need to realize that this is an economic issue that we need to try to figure through and work through our minds as we begin to build investment portfolios to think what's smart, not what's the stock of the day. It's important for us to understand that. Yeah, so there is no way that Zoom technology is worth more than 7 collective airline companies. That's just ridiculous. All right, that's just something for you to think about. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, I get some more thoughts on how we can manage ourselves with proper investment hygiene. Well, it's the COVID thing, right? Proper investment hygiene as we move into the next phase of the COVID-19 pandemic. We'll be back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. No matter anyway, say money won't get you too far, get you too far.
What if you could blend the classic strategies of investing with a contemporary approach to financial planning? That's what Friedman Financial can do for you. Wherever you are along your financial journey, Friedman Financial has the skills, technology, and experience to help you make smart financial decisions. Their team of certified financial planners will deliver an independent, objective, personalized plan for you. Friedman Financial. Financial advice in a language you can understand.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hopefully, you don't have to stay in your house all day. I think the gates are starting to open ever so slightly. Wear your mask, of course. Wear your mask. Don't go out and try to infect other people. Try to keep it safe. But hopefully, we're getting a little green shoots of hopes that we will start to get back to the real world. I want to get back to my office, even though I could go to my office. Here's the real reason that I don't go to my office right now. Our office is plenty large. Our office, frankly, is 4,000 square feet and there's only 5 people working in it. So, I mean, we have plenty of space in my office, to socially distance for sure. But here's the thing. We have become very judgy, haven't we? I mean, look, you get in your car and you drive down the street and you see 3 people walking by. Maybe they don't have a mask on. Maybe they do. And you think to yourself, oh, I wonder if they all live in the same house. Are they being socially distant? Or you're driving further down the street and you see five cars in a driveway. And you go, oh, they're throwing a party. They must be trying to break the rules. Everybody's judging everybody. You see six kids out in the middle school hanging out in the out of the backs of their cars. They back up their cars to make a circle. And they're sitting out there and you're going, oh, I can't believe that. I wonder if their parents know whether they're out there in that circle. We got to stop being so darn judgy, folks. But frankly, it's the reason why I'm not going back to work right now. It's terrible. Do I want to have a picture of someone driving by my office that sees five cars in the driveway, I mean, the parking lot in front of my office saying, oh, what's going on over there? Are they being safe? I don't know whether that would happen or not. And I'm still thinking that we'll go back to work soon in my office. But that's what we've become. We've become so judgy. Just because, and each of us handle this situation so differently. Earlier in the show, I shared the five or six different levels of COVID-19 safety or protection. I'm trying to find the sheet, but let me use the right term here. It was called the COVID risk tolerance, where I shared with you, are you being very strict or are you being very open? And or where would you fall within the range of all of that? And I think we're not, there are some, of course, that are extraordinarily strict. There are some that are extraordinarily liberal that say, I'll take on this virus. I'm going to walk out there. Come on, virus, come hit me because I want to get it and I want to get it out of my system. And then there's everybody in between. And where we fall within that range has probably changed, frankly, over the past few weeks. There are more and more people showing up to the supermarket. More and more people. Look, I went to Target. I went to Target yesterday. And for a silly reason, I wanted to get an eyeball, one of those video eyeballs that I stick on my computer so I can do better video chatting. I'm just currently using the camera that's on my laptop, but I'm looking for this Logitech eyeball that sits on my screen so that I can have a better angle. And I went over to Staples in Danvers. They didn't have it. They had sold out. So I go into Target and I'm thinking Target is probably, as you know, Target is packed. Target is very, very busy. There's a line outside of Target. And I'm looking to get this eyeball. And I'm thinking to myself, man, is this really that essential that I have to be here? But I am. I'm still going. And as I'm walking, they, by the way, they didn't have it. But as I'm walking towards the exit, they have this whole section, as you've probably seen it in Target, of like the dollar items, whole bunches of baskets of all sorts of paraphernalia and stuff. And there's this family. Well, actually, it was two moms. I don't know if they're moms, but two women and three other kids. They're all wearing masks. And they're all around this whole dollar thing. And they're all trying to figure out, do you think this would look good for the basket? Do you think this would be good for this person's basket? Do you think this would be good for this person's package? And they're trying to build like graduation packages. And I'm thinking to myself, if the whole idea was about remaining socially distanced and just getting the essentials, it frustrates me that a store like Target will even allow you to buy some of those items, or whether maybe, and if you can buy those items, maybe we're being a little bit restrictive on what is essential. I mean, if you can go into Target and you can buy pajamas, you can buy bras and underwear and everything else you might want, but you can't walk into Kohl's and buy that stuff, that doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Hopefully, we're going to begin to open up the doors so we can level the playing field a little bit. The biggest question will be, though, will people be willing to come back to work? There was a story on the news this past week on a gentleman from New Hampshire. I guess New Hampshire is starting to open up some of their outdoor seating. And he's got it all taped off and he's got his tables. Normally, he can host up to 300 people in his restaurant, but now he's only going to be able to have 75 people, and most of them will be outdoors. And he says, yeah, we're ready to go. We're going to lose money because no restaurant operates and survives when you have a 75-person capacity when you're normally at 300. He says, but his problem is he can't get his employees to come back to work because his employees are making more money staying at home, collecting an unemployment check than they will if they come to work. And if they come to work, there's several risks. Of course, there's the risk of infection, which is, of course, out there.
But the bigger risk is, will people buy? And if you go to work and you can't make your money through tips because people aren't there, maybe it made sense to stay at home and collect your unemployment check. That's not the case for just restaurants. It's for everybody. Folks, though, this extra $600 check is going to end in July. And there's discussion that Congress just passed a $3 trillion stimulus package that would like to extend that $600 payment through the end of the year. I think that's a huge mistake. Huge mistake. Now, do we need stimulus packages? Do we need to continue to support what's going to be happening moving forward? Absolutely we do. But I think perhaps the stimulus, that extra $600, why don't you give it to the employer? Let the employer pay the employee $600 for coming back to work rather than watching Netflix. Maybe there's something, and I'm not saying that that's the solution, but maybe there's something in between here that makes more sense. It doesn't make sense to me that the maximum unemployment check you can collect in New York might be $500 a month. That I'm using the might because it's around that number. But here in Massachusetts, the maximum unemployment check you can collect is $835. Yet each of those people will both get a plus $600. That doesn't make sense to me. You should be able to maybe, if you want to collect unemployment, and unemployment is usually half of what you're making as a gross income, you know what? Provide an unemployment check that equals the weekly pay of the employee, that brings them back to normal, not three, four, and five times what they were making before. That doesn't make sense to me. That's not fair. But we're living in a world where people, collections of people are having to make decisions for millions of others. Think about how difficult it is for you to sit around with your family to decide what to get for takeout tonight. And meanwhile, groups of people are trying to deal with decisions that will impact hundreds of millions of people. Folks, I believe we're all very fortunate. We're very fortunate that we are have our homes, that we are our families, that those of you who are listening to this show have access to technology where you can even listen to this radio show. You have a roof over your head. You're able to get the food that you need. And we seem to sometimes think that, well, our life must be just like everybody else's. Folks, if you've been around this country, you'd be amazed at how much better you have it than most people in this country. So what we think is good for us, what we think is what we need, is not necessarily what's enough for everybody else. The government, our government, whether they like them or not, has to try to make those decisions based upon the big picture, not what impacts us. And many of us fall into what we would call the top 10% of income earners in America. Yeah, we talked about that. Look, if you're making more than $100,000 as an individual, you're easily in the top 10% of all income earners in America, probably more like 5%. Yeah. Yeah, more than half the country is making under $40,000 a year, and some of them with a family. But they figure out a way to make it happen. We got to figure out the difference between wants and needs. I think we're doing a very good job of it here. And I think we have a great desire to want to get out and do things. Get out and connect, whether it's spiritually, whether it's socially, whether it's just getting out there and just being part of something else, just walking by and seeing people. You don't even have to connect with them, just knowing that other people are around us, that we're not just stuck in our house or stuck in our community, stuck in our neighborhood here. Things are going to get better, folks. We're going to get there, but we got to get out of here for now. And I'll be back next Sunday with more financial advice in a language you can understand. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risk, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about
mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity sub-accounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.